By the way, can I just point out, you've just invented a new word. Entertainmenting.
Well, hi.
Oh, hi, Michelle. How are you doing?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay is okay.
You look different.
Well, I probably sound different as well. I can't even say sound because for anyone who has actually seen our latest roundup video, which is on YouTube and I believe are going to be on the website shortly, I did the unveiling of the braces.
Metal mouth.
Tin grin.
Adult braces. Now, obviously, you have your own reasons for doing that. How do you feel wearing braces? I believe you had them as a teen.
I did. I had them as a teenager.
But I'm sure we can't tell us eavesdroppers can't tell, can we, guys? We can't hear a thing.
Yeah, thanks so much. But do you know what? Like, the weird thing is supply chain in this country, they've ruined everything. So I thought I was actually going to have like full grills, you know, like be a bit
hip-hop
gangster.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, I've got white on top and grill on the bottom. So
it's interesting. Hey-ho. Sometimes I think that they're even there, Michelle. Anyway.
I think you're being kind anyway.
So welcome, listeners. Welcome, eavesdroppers, to this week's edition of our Eavesdropping podcast with me, Geordie, her, Michelle.
Hello.
This week was our first unveiling of our monthly musings. If you haven't seen that on our social media, what Michelle and I have now done is a YouTube video of us talking about 20 minutes. We're going to try and keep it at 20 because we know you guys have a busy life. So what we did is we just chit-chatted, didn't we, Michelle, about the four episodes we've had that month of January 2022. So now in 4 weeks' time, we'll do another one. But what you need to do is go onto YouTube's and sign up.
Yeah, so the sign-up's fantastic because then you never miss any of our amazing content. But yeah, we've got the monthly drop. So there it is.
I like to call them monthlies, Michelle.
The monthlies. Have you had your monthlies yet?
I hope that all you eavesdroppers out there will have your monthlies. So let's move on. Did we get any feedback about our UFO / empaths episode last week featuring Sean Ryders?
Well, I did have a lot, and I mean a lot of comments on the social media video where you are dancing like Sean Ryder and I'm dancing like Bez.
That took a lot of effort on your part, I have to say. Not much on mine, but a lot on yours. You really went for it.
Well, you have to because Bez was always going for it. The thing is, I saw a friend last night and she said, oh yeah, I saw that one. You look absolutely mad. And that was the general comment from quite a few people. But you know, Bez was mad.
Well, was he mad or was he just very happy?
I think he was chemically very happy. So
I have to say, I actually saw a picture of him, which I'm going to tell you about in a minute. And I have to say that one thing you didn't capture, Michelle, although I think you did him brilliantly in that social media post on Instagram at eavesdropping_, was you didn't capture the eyes.
Oh.
They're white. The whites are very, 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 very big whites.
He's got the mad eyes.
Yeah, absolutely. But the reason why I saw that picture was because the other day, Mish, when I was walking down the street, I passed my usual news agent. And sometimes I just stop and have a quick glance across all the tabloids and see what's new. And there was this fantastic headline with which paper now? The Daily Star. Our favourite.
We love the Daily Star.
Where I suspect that most of the stories in there are made up. So bear with me when I tell you this one. The headline caught my eye. It said, Lost Ness. Underneath it said, and that's not the craziest thing we've heard this week, meaning the state of the world and our government in the UK, etc. The story was that someone took a picture of Loch Ness Monster or something that looked like the Loch Ness Monster in Wimbledon. They reckon he's travelled. How?
What?
I don't know. So this is what I mean by the Daily Star. They get things wrong. They showed the picture. Mish, you could probably find it and list it in our little notes at the bottom.
I'll put it in the show notes. But Wimbledon?
I'll tell you what I think it is. Well, for one, I know Wimbledon Common very, very well. I have spent a lot of time there, and I still don't live too far from it. I will go again. I know the area of water they're talking about. It's nothing more than a pond. So I really don't know how a monster would have gotten there. And yes, it does look a bit like a Loch Ness monster. It also looks like a tree branch. So,
well, my next question is, are the waterways joined up?
No.
Is there no. Of course not.
Fuck that.
So he had to travel over land and sea.
Yes, he didn't. What he joke. Or she or they, if you're talking about the Loch Ness monster, a.k.a. Nessie.
The woke Nessie.
But also in the Daily Star. So I looked at that paper today on my Readly subscription and discovered the story. It wasn't that great. But what I did find when I turned the page was famous spoonbender Yuri Geller. You know him, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the Israeli guy that used to bend spoons with his mind. He says that aliens are on their way. And he said there's a team of astrophysicists or whatever, like we saw on Sean Ryder's UFO documentary. People are looking at those skies with humongous telescopes, and they've been recording bursts of energy deep into our solar system that go off three times every hour. And the scientists have never seen the likes of it, Michelle.
It sounds crazy.
Yes, they are shocked. They said it's spooky. In fact, one leading astrophysicist said it's spooky. We haven't seen anything like that before. Nothing known to us will do that in the skies. And she also said it's quite close at 4,000 light years away. So.
What?
Yuri Geller, on the other hand, he thinks that the aliens will probably be here in about 75 years. I don't know why he thinks that, but that's his take.
That's his take on it.
The following page, one moment.
Oh, yes.
The following page is when I saw dear old Bez in his blue tartan suit. He was about to appear on the Lorraine Kelly show, and he's getting married, and Sean will be his best man. So there's our Bez news.
I didn't even think he was still in the headlines. Poor old Bez.
I thought you were going to say in the market. Yeah, he's on the market. He's not on the market anymore, ladies. He's about to be taken off. Sad days.
So, talking about scientists.
Oh, yeah.
We had an amazing comment from Neil the Scientist, who wrote basically an essay. It's so long and detailed. I can't actually talk all about it now. But if you go onto the Eavesdropping Facebook, you can find it, because he talks all about flat Earth, moon landing. He debunks some theories. And also he says he never used a Bunsen burner. So there you go. And he says he has worked with the space program.
Oh.
So guys. Yeah. So Neil the Scientist, get on the Facebook and read all about it. Read all about it.
Okay. So what are we talking about this week, Michelle?
Well, I don't know what you're talking about, but I sort of was inspired by the drinks we had the other night with the gorgeous Laura.
Yes, a drinks party conversation that was sparked up.
Yes. Well, look, she's a nurse. And when she was talking about, because, you know, we were talking about prescription drugs and fentanyl and oxy and all the stuff, which I think that's actually an episode in itself.
Yeah.
But I've got to put a pin in all these things. Anyway, I was telling her, oh, that's right, you're a nurse. Well, you know, you should really watch Mary Kills People.
Which I'd never heard of.
It's a great Canadian TV series. And actually, my sister was the one who put me onto it. It's basically about this hot doctor called Mary who, you know, she kills people.
Oh.
But it's not like Dexter or one of those murder shows. It actually takes this really complex issue of, you know, the whole medically assisted death.
Euthanasia.
Debate. Yes. And it just takes it to a whole new level, because Mary isn't some crazy angel of death doctor who's like a serial killer in disguise. She's providing a service that people believe they have the right to choose. And, you know, what she's doing is technically illegal, and it's a murky grey area. It sparks so much debate. But despite the flippant name of this TV series, it's actually really layered and really entertaining, because she's hot. There's like hot kind of romance dude, and you know, it's just a really good TV show, and it's a bit of a comedy too, so I enjoyed it, and it's definitely a series I would recommend.
Where would you find that, Michelle? And by the way, can I just point out, you've just invented a new word.
What did I say?
Entertaining.
What? Entertaining.
Yes, you said that.
It's the braces. Do you know what? I can blame everything on the braces. No.
Where would you find that TV show?
I don't know if it's on Netflix. I think it's on SBS in Australia.
How do you access that?
Oh, you just go online, make an account.
For SBS in Australia. If you're not in Australia, though, you can't watch things there.
Get a VPN, people. Get a VPN.
I don't know the illegal route. Michelle is on top of all those things.
I'm not saying I've done it. I just know the ins and outs of it.
Right.
But yeah, I think it's on SBS in Australia and it could be on Prime or something in the UK. I don't know. And okay. Americans, you've probably already all seen it. But this actually got me thinking about Angels of Death. And look, I don't know if you remember back in the 90s, Geordie, when, you know, I mean, look, we were barely born, but there was a case, a real life case of a guy called Dr. Jack Kevorkian.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Harold Shipman.
No, he's another one. But I thought, God, there's so many. I don't have time to look into them all.
Yeah.
So I just made a beeline for Jack Kevorkian.
Okay.
And because it really blew up in the 90s. It would have been around the time that you moved to the UK, actually.
Okay.
So I don't know if it got a lot of traction over here but it was huge in Australia.
I've never heard of it.
Okay. Well, buckle up. I say buckle up. It's actually, he's kind of a wild thinker.
Do we have trigger warnings for this, Michelle? Is it going to be scary?
No, it's not scary because I thought it was going to be, but actually I think it's more entertaining. Not really. It's just thought provoking because he's this American pathologist who campaigned for the planned death of the terminally ill.
Okay.
And I think he was sort of, you know, a real advocate for what the term assisted suicide, medically assisted suicide. And look, even when you just think about that term, medically assisted suicide, there's so much to unpack even in the concept of what that means. If you don't remember Jack Kevorkian, his actual name, and I remember it because it was such a weird name.
Yeah.
But he was also known by his nickname, which was Dr. Death. He was the original Dr. Death.
Okay. There's a podcast.
I think that's a different one.
Yeah?
I think that's a newfangled Dr. Death.
Oh.
One who actually was a neck surgeon.
Oh.
And that one is terrifying, chilling. This is like the original Dr. Death, not Dr. Death 2.0.
Okay.
And I actually think, having delved into this a little bit, it's a little unfair because he wasn't somebody who just wanted to kill people. He really, truly believed he was helping people.
Right.
And, you know, there are two sides to this debate, but I actually, when I was DuckDuckGoing, I found this really brilliant Vanity Fair article from 1991. So it's, you know, really capturing the mood of the time and what people thought of him. And because it was literally right when it was all kicking off. It's actually kind of pro-Kevorkian because they quote him and you hear his voice in this article. Like I said before, it's this murky grey area where society sees in black and white what he's doing as murder. But there's a piece in the article where the family of one woman, and her name was Janet Adkins, and I'll be talking about her a bit more in a moment, but the family refer to Kevorkian's actions as a noble service to humanity. So I think the ethics of euthanasia they're not clear, you know, there's so much to think about. But I'm just going to run you through some details about Jack Kevorkian. So he was basically a child prodigy. And after he graduated from medical school, he was kind of shunned by his peers because he had these crazy ideas about medical research, mainly connected to death and people on death row. In 1959, he put together this proposal where he put forth that prisoners on death row should be given a choice to participate in medical experiments.
Ooh.
That would ultimately result in their death.
Oh my God.
But the thing is, his point was, well, they're going to be dying either by the electric chair or injection or whatever.
Yeah.
They're going anyway.
That just kind of feeds into last week when I said my theory on alien abduction, that it's actually the military doing it in secret and they're experimenting on live subjects. Is there a need to experiment on live subjects, Michelle?
I think there is, actually. I do. I mean, I don't know what kind of feedback they're going to get when he's already dead. Like, you know, when your subject's gone. But
How did that make you feel?
Yeah. But let me rephrase that. I don't know that there's a need for it. But I think that society could learn a lot from people saying this affected me in this way. I'm not condoning it by any means. But I just think there's a lot to think about with what Kevorkian was, you know, putting forth, which is these people are going to die anyway. They've been sentenced to death. And he had this thing where, well, why not give the prisoner an opportunity to give something back to the community and to contribute to the advancement of medicine?
I don't know. That makes it feels really dark, Michelle. Feels really dark because it's almost saying that this person doesn't deserve to be treated in a humane manner.
No. It wasn't that he was saying they have to do this. They're saying give them a choice and out of their own free will.
I get it.
If they want to, I'll take them and I'll
but who
experiment
would?
On them.
Who would? What do they gain from it? They don't gain anything apart from, I mean, these are murderers or people who've done really, or maybe even innocent men and women who haven't committed any murders whatsoever. Well, who would, in their right mind, would ever agree to that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, because the thing is, the experimentation was going to happen on the day of their death.
Ew.
Like, so you had the choice to either have a medical experiment or go to the chair that day.
Right.
And you could choose, and you could choose in advance. And in his mind, what he was proposing was pretty straightforward. Here you go, you got a choice. You want to be a lab rat or you want to go to the chair? No skin off my nose, but here's an option.
Blimey.
And do you know what, Jordan? I mean, I'm not terribly shocked by this. I kind of see the logic in it. Does that make me so
I'm a bit concerned. I'm absolutely floored. I can't believe this.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, most people are in your camp because, it didn't go down well. And he had literally zero support for his ideas. Look, and I'm not saying that I would support his ideas. I'm just saying.
Sounds like you would.
No, but I'm just putting myself in the prisoner's shoes.
Yeah.
It's called empathy.
Okay.
Good. Like we talked about last
week.
If I put myself in the prisoner's shoes and look, if I did have any kind of remorse and someone said to me, you know, you could actually make a contribution to your life and, you know, maybe have an element of atonement for what you did. I'm not saying I would do it. I would say I would maybe consider it because if I'm going to go anyway, do I want, you know, like those nodes put on my head and be fried to death or an inject? I don't know.
It's
I don't know.
Icky.
God knows. Yeah, but God knows what the experiment would be.
It's
actually
all icky. Yeah, that's what I want to know. You didn't find out?
No.
Oh.
but yeah. So anyway, he, like I said, dude had wild ideas. That was one of them. So after that didn't go down well. He sort of kept a lid on things until 1976. When again, he targeted prisoners on death row and he started advocating for them to, again, contribute to society by giving them the choice to donate their organs after they were put to death.
I get that.
And, well, that was shut down. People were like, no. Well, I guess people don't want to think, oh, I've got the liver of a murderer inside me.
But they don't know. When you're a recipient of an organ, you don't know where it's come from.
Well, I don't know. It was shut down. But, I mean, I wonder, you know how they say that water holds the memory of things? I wonder if there's some kind of weird, icky thing where people wonder, oh, I've got the liver of a murderer. I feel really, like, full of rage, like I want to kill someone. Wow. I don't know.
There's plenty of Hollywood movies that address those very things. I think Face Off was one of them. And behind something, someone's eyes, something about someone's eyes.
Ooh,
there's lots of movies. Or the Heart of a Killer. I don't know. I'm just making shit up now. But I reckon there's plenty of Hollywood fodder on that subject.
Yeah, I'm sure. And if not, like, guys, take the idea. We're happy. But yeah, so he was getting a bit of a reputation as someone with really out there ideas. And he, like I said, he was a pathologist and he was working at Pontiac General Hospital in Michigan, when he decided to do a few of his own experiments.
Oh, sheesh.
So what he was doing was he was drawing blood from freshly dead corpses.
Oh.
And injecting them in the blood into living people.
Oh, my and, God.
But mainly the voluntary colleagues at the hospital who he managed to get on board with his ideas.
How?
And he got good results, it was why let all that blood just go to waste when it could help people?
How?
And
can it, help
it works.
Someone?
Well, it's They've like died a blood of transfusion. Oh. Yeah, but who knows? Like, just because you, what if you were in there as a car crash victim and you died and you're perfectly healthy,
yeah,
all that healthy blood's going to waste. Is his
oh, right. No,
thought.
I get it. Like, if you're just harvesting the blood for almost an organ donation, then that's fine. But I've got an image of him drawing the blood and then going straight to Nurse Jessica on Ward 7 and saying, sit down, love, I'm just going to inject some of this into you, see what happens.
Well, I think that's exactly what he did.
Oh.
Because he wanted to see if it would work. Because, at the moment, only blood donations are from live people into live people. He was doing blood from dead people into live people. And it worked. The blood was still usable.
Viable. Okay.
So he took this idea to the Pentagon because he thought that it could actually be a really valuable tool on the front lines to help wounded soldiers.
Oh, okay.
And they shut him down. They were not interested at all. I mean, like I said, he was a wild thinker. He was really thinking outside the box. And then he turned all his attention onto medically assisted suicide. And his first medically assisted suicide patient was a 54-year-old woman called Janet Adkins. She had Alzheimer's and she was diagnosed in 1989. And then she read about Jack Kevorkian because I think he sort of had a bit of a name for himself. He was advocating for medically assisted suicide. And she got in touch with him and, basically said, help me die. And a year later, he met up with Janet, agreed to help her die. And he made this thing called a death machine. And it was basically a machine he made from valves and gears and all bits that he picked up at.
Oof. Far out.
Flea markets and whatever. And he put it all together and it was kind of a killing machine. And on the day that Janet was ready to die, he picked her up, drove her to the local park, hooked her up to his homemade suicide machine, which was in the back of his rusty old VW camper. And within 6 minutes, Janet had died.
Jesus.
And it was a machine that could inject you with the lethal dose of.
So he wasn't actually administering the dose?
No.
Right.
As soon as Janet died, he was basically arrested and charged with murder. But murder. Did you hear I said murder? Murder. Anyway, murder. So, but the thing is that in Michigan at the time, there were no laws in place about assisted suicide. So the charges were dropped. And then in 1990, the Michigan kind of governing body, the state of Michigan actually, they were like, this dude's, he's too out there for us. So they revoked his medical license and they said he was no longer permitted to practice medicine or to work with patients. But thing is, loads of people got in touch with him and wanted his help. So, he ended up
working off the books.
Working off the books. Oh. And according to his lawyer, he helped 130 plus people, mostly terminally ill,
right,
in their lives between 1990 and 1998. And, he, like I said, he made the death machine, which injected them with drugs that would kill them. But he also made another machine called the Mercy Machine, which was like a gas mask, that you would use in combat, right? So a gas mask was hooked up to a canister of carbon monoxide and the person would just put that on and breathe it in and float away. So
wow.
The thing here is that even though he made the machines and was involved in helping them die, he wasn't the one, pulling the trigger or whatever, or even
right.
turning on the machine.
Yeah,
it was them. They had to press the button to release the drugs or the chemicals. Mm-hmm. So, technically that's kind of a gray area too. And he got called like Dr. Death, but I think in a way things have kind of moved on about people's ideas of what that really means. Because I read this thing in the New York Times where he said, "My ultimate aim is to make euthanasia a positive experience. I'm trying to knock the medical profession into accepting its responsibilities. And those responsibilities include assisting their patients with death." And look, when I read that, I just thought, this guy wasn't a killer who got off on killing people.
Okay.
I think he really genuinely wanted to help people die with dignity. And I think when people are faced with a terminal illness, being in control of when and how you die must be a great comfort to them. Probably not their families, because I think families are always wanting every last moment with their loved ones. But I think it's a really tough decision. And obviously, you know, in Switzerland, they have Dignitas, which is a non-profit society that helps people die. But I did some research into that, and they've been going since 1998. They've only really had 2,000 people in that time. They've only really helped 2,000 people. And I thought, God, I wonder why that is. But actually, when I looked into it, it's because it costs around £15,000 to die. So it's not a cheap thing at all. But in Swiss money, that's actually not very much. But I think for most people, that's beyond their reach. And also, to even be able to get to Switzerland, you have to be well enough to travel. And if you're terminally ill, you probably aren't. So there's a lot of logistics. And also, you know, there's a lot of box ticking. And the other thing is, in Switzerland, you can't have the body taken back to the UK because it's a criminal offence in the UK. So you would be charged with murder if you brought the body back, because there would be an inquiry. So it's really complex. But more than that, I think the ethics behind it are also really tricky. But just going back to Dr. Jack Kevorkian, he was tried four times. Four times they tried to get him on murder charges. And he was acquitted three times, but the fourth trial ended up in a mistrial. And then in 1998... he was actually charged with second degree murder, because they got him on the fact that they'd revoked his license and he wasn't legally allowed to possess the substances that were killing people. So that's how they got him. And he stupidly decided he was going to represent himself. So it didn't go well. And after 2 days, they found him guilty of second degree murder or homicide, actually. And he was sentenced to 10 to 25 years in prison. But he only served 8 years and 2.5 months before he was released. And, you know, he's been a big advocate and campaigner for assisted suicide since. Thing is, over the years, there was a bit of investigation into him, and that's a bit murky. So there was a report in the Detroit Free Press where they reckon 60% of the patients who died from Kevorkian's methods were not terminally ill.
Ooh.
And 13 of them had not even complained of any pain.
Ooh.
So the report also said that...
were they mentally depressed or...
I don't know.
Ooh.
Maybe. Let's see. So there was an allegation that he didn't really counsel his patients. So there were 19 people who, within 24 hours of meeting him, were already dead.
Whoa.
That he wasn't really offering any psychiatric examinations. And, you know, in 19 cases, there were people with depression and just unhappy people. That is a little bit murky. And he actually went on, and I read this quote where he said, "What the difference does it make if someone is terminal? We are all terminal." So what he means is we're all going to die, whether you're terminally ill or not. The reasons people have are their own reasons. So his view was a patient had to be suffering, but they didn't have to be mentally ill. And he reckons, in the same interview, it said that he declined 4 out of 5 requests. So he wasn't, he was picky. Like I said, it's a slippery slope here of ethics. And I am for people's free will. But also, you know, what about euthanasia of infants, of babies.
Right.
You know, that's a whole nother kettle of fish. No, people with mental incapabilities or disabilities, the elderly who maybe can't make these decisions, financial motivations. Oh, there's a lot to think about.
And that's probably why it's illegal, because it's such a difficult thing to navigate.
I think so too. But with Kevorkian, angel of death or a man on a mercy mission? For me, I think he's more on a mercy mission.
Is he still alive?
No, he died in, I think, 2011. He was 83.
Uh-huh.
So he had a long life, but, you know, I don't think he had an assisted suicide.
No one helped him on his way out. Okay.
You know, the debate on this is still raging, but yeah. There you go, Geordie.
Thank you, Michelle. Thanks for that. That's really interesting.
Well, I'd love to know what people think about, you know, medically assisted suicide, and if anyone has any strong ideas, either, you know, for or against it. I think it's a topic that has a lot wrapped up in it. So.
Oh, yeah. I can imagine that it'll be as divisive as COVID. So there you go. Where do you go? Michelle, I had a little flick around the mags this week and I found a lovely story, which I'm going to tell you about today. Do you remember Phil and Holly, you know, on This Morning? We love that show and we use them a lot for our research. Well, before it was Phil and Holly on This Morning, it was the married phenomena of Richard Madeley and his lovely wife, Judy Finnegan, a.k.a. Richard and Judy. And we have talked about them before because we were in the audience for their evening show, which I don't think went down too well. But we had a great time, didn't we? We met some great guests.
Yeah.
Back in 1998, Richard and Judy did a show, but Judy was off sick. I think she was having her women's problems at the time. Don't quote me. I don't know. I do remember she wasn't very well for a little while. And Julia Carling was standing in for her. They also had the Reverend Lionel Fanthorpe. If anybody remembers 40 and TV, now 40, do you know about why it's called the 40 and Times and 40 and TV? There's a guy called Charles Fort. I don't know too much about him, but he was a pioneer in anomalous phenomena. All different things that can't be proven. 40 and TV was for people who liked hearing about things like aliens and ghosties and all that kind of thing.
Yay!
So, and there was this fabulous biker style, like rock and reverend. He was old at the time, Reverend Lionel Fanthorpe, that was his name, and he was always kind of like rock and roll and really cool, but he was also a reverend. Anyway, he was on for this episode, and it was a phone-in called Living with Ghosts.
I love it already. I love it.
So the phone-in went as well as it could go. Then a chap called Kevin Whelan called in from Sleaford in Lincolnshire with a tale to tell. Now, Sleaford you may have heard of because there's a band called Sleaford Mods who are a post-punk musical duo and they've won lots of awards. I haven't heard any of their music, but they're doing very well by all accounts.
Okay.
Anywho, Kevin Whelan was driving home. No, he was driving from Lincoln to Sleaford on the A15, which is that road in those two directions, on a Sunday, 2 a.m. Now, don't forget, this is in 1998, so it's 2 weeks before the show had aired. And just before the Rustington turn off, he saw something floating ahead of him on the horizon that looked like a large white bin bag. Kevin wasn't bothered by this at all. He thought it was just car headlights or something weird. But as he approached the bin bag, a face suddenly appeared in the top right of his windscreen.
What?
I know. When I was reading this, it actually terrified me. Kevin said the face looked Greek, with dark hair and olive green pitted skin, baring its teeth and holding its left hand up.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And below the neck was a bright fluorescence. So it was just like a flash had gone off from the neck down. Kevin was shocked and scared, but carried on driving for almost a minute until the car went into a dip in the road. There's a big dip. If anyone knows this road, he went into the dip and the face faded away. Poor Kevin was so petrified. He put his foot down to get home ASAP. And when he got home, he ran in, woke his wife. She said she'd never seen him so distressed in all their married life. He was as white as a sheet, covered in goosebumps and crying.
So what you're going to say, and shat his pants.
No, I don't know if he did. If he did, he didn't air that fact for Richard Madeley on this morning. He doesn't believe in ghosts, Kevin, so he didn't think it would be a ghost. But he later discovered from a local policeman that a motorcyclist had been killed on the same road in recent times, I think, at the same time as he saw this, and he lost both his legs in the accident.
Oh.
Once this landed in Judy and, well, not Judy, Richard, not Judy, lap, they suddenly found other witnesses phoning in about Ruskington, and ooh, Richard dubbed it the Ruskington Horror. And that's what it's been known as ever since. And it was our Dickie that named it that. So other witnesses would come forward and tell of their own sightings on the same stretch of road. There's a chicken farmer called Rob Burkett who saw something walking up from the side of the road with his hands up as if to warn him at around 8:30 in the evening. And it was in October or November in 1984. And at this point, Dickie decided there's something in this. So he sent a team of researchers off to Lincoln to do some more research. And that's when loads more people came forward. And they had week after week, I think they had talk of the Ruskington Horror on this morning. Then there's this guy whose article I read in the Fortean Times. He's a professor, Rob Gandy, and he put out a call for witnesses as part of his British Isles Horror series in the magazine, the Fortean Times. Right. So Ruskington is very flat and was used as a World War II base for the RAF during the World War II. So that may have some kind of link to the events, who knows. There was another witness, Sarah Martin, who was with her boyfriend in her car returning home from the cinema one evening in 1996 or 97, they can't quite remember, when something ran out from a ditch and in front of their car. This thing had no face and they drove straight through it. Sarah cried out. The boyfriend saw nothing.
Oh.
Another time, there was a girl called Catherine Stevenson, who was 15 in the 80s. She was walking to school in Ruskington when she felt a cold shiver up her back. She turned around and saw a figure with just a head and shoulders and something like a sheet below with no neck, no arms and no legs, just walking out of the ditch or floating, I guess. I don't know.
Whoa.
So many witnesses, Michelle, came forward to tell the researchers of this morning their own Ruskington horror stories. They weeded out the obviously fake ones because there was quite a few, but there was such a huge amount, and they really did think there was something in that. So some research on the area found that there was an execution site, or a gibbet, I think it's known as, where they hanged highwaymen and other criminals and put them on display so as to deter other criminals. It's kind of like Game of Thrones when they arrived and there's all these slaves like crucified and stuff. That's the thing they used to do.
Well, it's a little bit Handmaid's Tale too. Do you remember?
No, I don't watch it. It's too scary.
Oh, they hung all the
don't spoilers.
No, it's just one horrible detail in many in a line of many detail. Horrible details in that show.
Yeah, I won't be watching that. There's also a legend of witches being killed along that stretch of road. And one story goes that a witch stopped. She stopped a Knight Templar. There was also a Knight Templar building or whatever around there, a tower. So anyway, this witch stopped a knight and asked him possibly for a toll, so for some money to cross. The story goes that the knight somehow upset the witch and she cursed him. But the area was then known for horses going lame or coaches overturning. Ooh. And nowadays it's cars stopping unexpectedly or crashing. But if she cursed him, how did it leave its mark on the area?
It's a bit weird. Yeah, weird. I don't know. I might call bullshit on that.
Yeah.
Bullshit.
Bullshit. Some people think the ghost with its warning hand is to let travellers know to beware. And aside from witches and hanged highwaymen, local folklore also names it as a plague pit. Other ideas come up have been the crossing of positive and negative ley lines.
Ooh.
Or is it crashed Air Force pilots from World War II?
Or
maybe. Was it the local hermit who lived in a shack in a nearby field and was run over and killed at the spot in the early 20th century? Many things.
Yeah.
Don't let's forget our motorcyclist who lost his legs from Kevin Whelan's original story. So they sent out Shirley Wallace, another 40 and TV lady. She's a psychic reader and medium, and she's appeared on the television show 40 and TV.
That's not your psychic, Shirley. What's her name?
Shirley Ghostman. No, that's a comedy character.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
No, No, this Shirley Wallace is quite legit. And she visited the place with a team. They went to a lot of surrounding areas, which I didn't look into, but there is an awful lot of stuff going on. There's that Templar Tower, Dunsby, I think, or Dernsby. I can't remember. I didn't look into it because there was so much info. And I just wanted to focus on this stretch of road at Ruskington. So she picked up on lots of energies. Like I said, the Dunsford Tower was a few miles north. But at this A15 site, at the Ruskington turnoff, she was overwhelmed with smells and sounds and visions of the supernatural. She picked up that there had been a gibbet there. Do you remember I said what that was?
Yeah, the hanging. Yeah.
And also the motorcyclist. And she said that the area, because of all this psychic carrying on and supernatural business, it would cause confusion to motorists passing, especially if they were tired or if it was late at night.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So she told Richard Madeley and the This Morning team that the motorcycle, she saw the motorcyclist there in situ. She came across him, and she said he was so distressed by the loss of both his legs before dying that kept him earthly bound. So she got him to leave. And I think she also cleansed the area of about 9 or 10 other spirits that she found. So she got the motorcyclist to leave by urging him to rush towards her. How he did that with no legs, I don't know. I guess he's a spirit. And then departing through her body. Sight cleansed, she said. Sight was cleansed. She'd stake her life on it. She would put her head on the chopping block for it. Well, sadly, Shirley, no. You were wrong, my love.
Oh, no.
Because yet more sightings were reported in the coming years.
Of the legless motorcyclist?
No, the same thing that everybody's been seeing, which is a bin bag floating across, or a cloaked figure walking across the road, or a face in the windscreen, or feeling like you've run something over, or actually running something over. I've got a few more stories to tell you. It was mostly people seeing the cloaked figure on the side of the road, but one couple who were travelling from Boston late at night had decided to pull in at a lay-by for a cigarette. They both experienced this terrible sensation in their chest of it tightening, and they were both struggling to breathe. They said they had the feeling of being choked by an invisible hand.
Really? Wasn't just dodgy cigarette?
Shouldn't be smoking, guys.
No, it's not good for you.
Warning.
It'll kill you.
Big hand coming out, big green hand and a scary face going, don't do it. In October 99, a witness was driving his Mini, which is a little tiny car for those of you who don't know, through the local site, followed by his parents. So he was driving ahead, his parents were following on. Once they had arrived at their destination, his mum ran up to him and said they'd seen a person walk in front of his car and that their son had driven right through the person. They felt sure he'd knocked someone over. But as they travelled on, there was no one there. They were horrified. That same witness, that same chap with the Mini, was driving along the same stretch of road a few days later when someone did actually jump in front of his Mini. So he had to swerve to avoid them and drove into the ditch. He was surprised when he got out of the car. No one was there. The following Christmas Eve, this poor bloke allowed his friend to drive his little Mini Cooper or whatever it was, Mini, and they once again went through the haunted site.
Yeah.
And then the Mini's engine cut out suddenly, so they had to pull over. When they were trying to start the car again, when they could smell burning, so they jumped out of that car and they pegged it up the road just in time for the car to set on fire.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
They called the local fire brigade. There was an explanation, a rational explanation for the engine catching fire, but not for the car cutting out where it did. And this is in that spot where centuries before, carriages would be upturned and horses would go nuts, all sorts.
I wonder why they were picking on him.
Because he's obviously a local.
Yeah.
He's there a lot.
Yeah.
In 2016, some posters on a Fortean site, so there must be like an internet site, they told this tale that still gives them shivers to this day. They were driving through the site in early evening in February. So it's always in the dark winter months when these sightings occur, Michelle, it seems.
Around
they saw
now.
A dark Exactly, be careful, all you Lincolnshire natives. They saw a dark masculine figure cross the road. So they admitted they were going a little bit over the speed limit at the time. So they had to start their braking when they saw this person cross the road. They realised they had to brake really hard to let them cross the road. But the figure just stopped in the centre of the road.
Oh, God.
There were vehicles coming the other way. So this person has stopped while there's a van coming towards this figure in the middle of the road. The lights from the van illuminated the figure. So the person in the car, the poster, could see this figure really clearly. Then the van didn't stop, went straight through the figure. But the weird thing was the light headlights on the driver's side went out. Just on that side as it went through the figure.
Because I want to know if the lights shone through, like the figure was transparent, or if it was, it seemed like a solid figure.
No, it said that it was outlined. The figure was outlined by all the coming. So I don't think it did go through.
Yeah, okay.
But
okay.
When the car went through the figure, the light went out. So maybe it went out for a moment. So it was almost like a solid thing.
Yeah.
Oof. Weird, right?
Really weird.
So the research done by Professor Rob Gandy shows that if you believe witness testimony, there's one sighting a year for the last 30 years.
Is there any connection between the dates? Like, is it always in February between these 2 weeks or
There's so many. To be honest, Michelle, I only gave you the tip of the iceberg. There are so many stories, all very, very similar. Some people have seen fog, low-lying fog. There's a dip in the road that I mentioned before. There's a lot of activity going on in and around that dip.
Okay.
The Reverend Lionel Fanthorpe, he said he wondered if they were traditional ghosts or people from another dimension crossing through, which we've spoken about before.
Oh, I love that idea.
With the hand? Why always with the hand?
I don't know.
What's that hand thing? I'm doing the hand for you.
You are doing the hand thing and I'm like, talk to the hand. But you know,
what?
So I remember when I was in New Zealand with that New Zealand boyfriend we talked about a few episodes ago, Paul. His family's from the South Island and it is very damp and there's fog and it's
misty.
It's really beautiful but really eerie in the winters. And he says that he's often felt weird kind of spirity things. And he says maybe it's a New Zealand thing, I don't know, maybe I got this wrong, but there's something to do with fog and mist and that it is like spirits, like it's another way for spirits to kind of have, I don't know, it's vaporous or something, but it's...
Well, it goes colder. Usually if mist's there, it's because it's gone colder as well.
Mm. So he thinks there's a correlation between all of that. And it sounds like it's that kind of place in Lincolnshire. Maybe. Cold and misty.
There's no doubt that the area is a vehicle black spot for accidents because a lot of people have had accidents there. Most of the time they have confessed, witnesses to these phenomena, if you like, have confessed to travelling a little over the speed limit. So I don't know if that's got something to do with it. Maybe they're, I don't know, a little frantic.
Slightly out of control.
Who knows?
Who knows?
It only happens at night or at dusk, and that's when... For me, the light can really play tricks.
Yeah.
And also there's long stretches of road with flat fields on either side of it and it can become mesmerizing. They're really the only kind of things that they've come up with to explain away, apart from obviously it's ghosts or it's people crossing over into different dimensions, which I don't necessarily know if that can be just given as an explanation.
Well, what do you think, having read loads of stories?
I am really intrigued and I'm also quite nervous to go there.
Oh, really?
I'd hate to be one of the people that year to see it. I hate that. I'm not like Sean Ryder. I'm not up for an experience.
Really? But that's probably why it will happen to you, because everybody who wants it are like, come on, I'm here. Give me the ghosties. But for you, you're like, I don't want it. And that's when you'll see it. They target you. They smell the fear.
Well, I don't know what I think. I do, you know, we had some interesting stories. We got from our friend Alex Smart in Australia, who was writing for the Reading Times or something, the Reading Chronicle. I can't remember, but he had some great stories like the stone tape theories.
Mm.
Stone tape? Yeah, but that can't be stone tape because there's no stone walls there. But the idea that an area would soak up memories and replay them, that's quite interesting.
Yeah,
and the fact that there was a lot of death and a lot of horror that had occurred in that area. Witches being drowned and stabbed.
Hanging.
People being hung. Hanged. Airmen crashing to the ground. Mm. Maybe it is ley lines. I don't know much about them. I don't know.
I don't either, because ley lines a something that when we looked into it into a previous episode, you know, you've got your naysayers and you've got the people who really believe in it. So ley lines, I don't know, but it does seem that things do happen in certain spots. Mm. I have no explanation for it, but.
Well, I just found it fascinating. I thought it was
fascinating.
Wonderful. And Richard Madeley was the godfather of coining the phrase the Ruskington horror. So thank you, Richard. Thank you, Judy.
Oh, and do you know what? When we were watching Richard on I'm a Celeb, he was
loved him.
Pure gold. He was such a nice man, you know.
Yeah.
He was lovely. So
shame he had a health scare and had to leave early.
Oh, it was the tragedy of the series, really.
It really was.
But no, he was wonderful and good on him. I wonder if that's a career highlight.
What, the Ruskington horror?
Yeah. naming all of these like weird, mysterious things that are going on.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks for that amazing story. Lots of stories.
Pleasure. So, Michelle, that leaves us to the end of the show for the week. And don't forget, listeners, if you've enjoyed this, then maybe you'll like hearing all about what happened in January. I know you've listened, but you can see us talking about it. There's a few extra little bits and pieces that we've discovered post-show.
Yeah. Oh, well, anyway, great to see your lovely face, even though I just saw it an hour ago.
and yours. But in the meantime, all we have to say to you guys out there right now is whatever you do,
wherever you are,
please don't forget to continue to be eavesdropping.